Welcome to the Forest Path Podcast, a podcast sharing the teachings of awakened meditation masters of the modern era. Direct your mobile device via your favorite podcasting app so that you can listen to Dhamma wherever you are. This episode is a talk given by the Thai Forest Meditation Master Ajahn Mahabua, and it's titled The Venerable Acharya Mun's Mode of Practice. It was first published as part of the book Kamatana, The Basis of Practice, which was translated by the monks at Wat Papan Thad. A quick note to listeners, there is quite a lot of Pali terminology thrown into this teaching. A key term often used is satipanya, which means mindfulness with wisdom. The term chitta refers to the mind, and the term samadhi refers to the deep absorption meditations. Kalesa refers to the defilements of the mind that lead us towards suffering, and an aramana refers to an object, usually a mental object in meditation. Finally, acharya means teacher and is the Pali equivalent of the Thai term ajahn. Where translated terms in English are used with Pali terms in brackets, I've mostly just used the English translations, which are sensible, meaningful, and allow the narration to flow more easily. May you all benefit from hearing this gift of Dhamma. The Venerable Acharya Mun's Mode of Practice by Ajahn Mahabua. The nature of the Venerable Acharya Mun's mind was quite dynamic, quick, and sensitive to the various events with which it came into contact. In the beginning of the practice of bhavana, he used buddho as the parikama object. When the chitta converged into calm, there arose a picture nimitta, sometimes of himself lying dead and sometimes of the remnants of a corpse that seemed lying in front of him. He therefore took up these images as the objects of bhavana. Sometimes he would establish them to appear loathsome, by various techniques which depend on the proficiency and skillfulness of satipanya to devise. It would sometimes be totally broken up, just leaving the skeleton, and sometimes these bones would be collected together in a heap and burned down to ashes. A picture nimitta of himself lying dead and the remnants of a corpse were all established by the same method. They appeared at different times, only depending on the suitability of the investigation that was being carried out at the time. After having established the fire burning the bones to ashes, his chitta converged fully to the base of samadhi, where it rested for hours before withdrawing. When the chitta withdrew, he continued with the establishing. He said that from the day the chitta experienced the picture nimitta, and the establishing of the nimittas into various appearances according to his wish, together with the ability to burn the remnants of the corpse at any time, he constantly established the remnants of the corpse with just the skeleton remaining with him at all times. It remained with him regardless of whether he was standing or walking, sitting or lying down, excepting only the time when he was investigating the corpse by the various techniques, or when the chitta converged into samadhi and rested alone. During this time there was no concern for any other things. The strength of his chitta could be clearly seen to progress, and his base of samadhi to become firmly established due to his consistent acquisition of the nimitta as the sharpening stone for discernment. He was able to establish the mental image of the skeleton within himself. He and the skeleton became one and the same, until there was no question concerning the origin of this skeleton or who became this skeleton. He then dispensed with this way of establishing, for once the nimitta had become himself, it was no longer necessary to send the chitta to establish the external picture. From then on, he used the body as the basis of investigation. It was up to the proficiency and skillfulness of satipanya to decide the aspects as to how the body should be investigated. The investigation was then carried on as he wished. He said that during this time, his concentration was very firm and stable to investigating the body with panya until the citta was very easily converged into samadhi. The parikama object of Buddho that originally was used to direct the citta was given up the very day that the picture nimitta clearly appeared. He then used both the nimitta and the parikama object of ati, bones, as the aramana of the heart in place of Buddho. There was only establishing and investigating the states of integration, change, and dissolution of the body in every posture, excepting only the time of sleep. This continued until his body, although really still there, turned into the space element due to the power of investigation. The citta was devoid of all materiality such as the body. This was due to the power of discernment which relentlessly investigated without pause. He was very skilled in every level of samadhi and just as proficient and quick in the vipassana investigation of the body, both one's own and others. He said that the vipassana of this level caused the citta to become very bright and marvellous. If one is not mindful and discerning, one might enjoy this happiness and comfort to the point of forgetting to develop more penetrating insight. One could become unknowingly addicted to this state of voidness because one might think that it was definitely nibbana. For one had constantly heard, until it was deeply embedded in one's heart, that nibbana was just the state of emptiness. But one didn't know what the characteristic of nibbana's voidness was. With that specific emptiness that had appeared, one didn't know if there was anything hidden within it. For in truth, it was just the very subtle and mysterious delusion of one's heart, rather than the emptiness of nibbana. Before one can pass beyond the Rupa Dhamma, by using the various techniques of investigation, Satipanya must revolve around the body nearly all the time. The exception being the time when the citta, after having investigated and analysed, becomes very tired due to its work and exertion and rests calmly in samadhi. When it withdraws, re-strengthened, it then continues on with this work of body analysis, having the tilakana as the way. This is because the body is an important object in the circle of practice, and the more one is proficient and skillful in the investigation of the body, the more one will be bold and fearless in one's practice. For the body is the source and home of the coarser kinds of sexual craving and wrong view. They take up residence openly, and in some cases, manifest themselves in a very coarse and disgusting manner. Even amongst those who have kalesas, it is found to be distasteful and unbearable to the point of being sickening. For this reason, the practitioner who endeavours to destroy the kalesas must concentrate on the body analysis until becoming proficient, adept, and capable of definitely cutting out sexual craving at all times. The kalesa of wrong view is much more piercing and adverse to both oneself and others than any other kind of kalesa because it manifests itself so quickly, essentially depending on attachment to the body. It is taught that one should investigate the body and the Four Noble Truths, for these are the most important dhammas in the circle of the religion. This should be done a lot, until all doubts disappear. Then one will pass beyond, without any trace of yearning remaining. The Venerable Acharya Mun was very proficient and adept in mindful investigation of the body, and therefore very proficient in the various dhammas both internal and external, more so than any of the other practitioners. He said that once beyond the body, there were no longer any problems with lust, without having to ask anyone else about it. This is wasting one's time and showing one's stupidity for others to laugh at, for it is something within oneself. By the thoroughness of the insight of this level, it disappears from oneself. The heart can live quite comfortably without having any troubles when just this sexual craving is destroyed. This is because raga tanha, sexual craving, is a thing that consumes without ever coming to satisfaction. It constantly disturbs and incites the heart, making one become cowardly, lacking in courage, easily disheartened, and weak in one's way of practicing for magga, pala, and nibbana. For these are within the circle of Satcha Dhamma, the true Dhamma, and Satipatthana, the establishment of mindfulness, which the one who practices can reach with persevering effort. The Venerable Acharya Mun said that before the body ceased to be a problem for investigation, all the aspects of the body that were being investigated by the various techniques converged together into the heart. The aspects on the side of suffering's cause, which from the beginning had thought of the body as beautiful, pleasant, and pleasing, and those on the side of the path, which conceive the body as unpleasant, repulsive, loathsome, impermanent, unsatisfying, and not self, both ceased at the same moment when the image of the body converged into the heart. The pleasant and beautiful and the unpleasant and repulsive diverged, leaving a way for the heart to pass through without any yearning between the two. No more were there nimittas to follow and deceive with their pleasant and unpleasant aspects. Every time he investigated, he just saw the mind create the image within and then it ceased. Only that. From then on, the citta was devoid of the various kinds of materiality, both that of the body and the external material that existed everywhere. There was no sign to label them as beautiful or repulsive as there had been in the past. There was just brightness and the citta totally devoid of all things. It just revolved with thoughts and reflections, with mindfulness as the guiding factor. The next targets for Satipanya to concentrate on were the dhammas that arose and ceased within the heart. Vedana, feeling. Sanya, perception. Sankara, mental formations. Vijnana, consciousness. And finally, avijja, the origin of all the kilesas. That concludes the Dhamma teaching, The Venerable Acharya Mun's Mode of Practice, by the Venerable Ajahn Mahabua. If you'd like to hear more talks by Ajahn Mahabua and other meditation masters of the forest tradition, subscribe to the Forest Path podcast using your favourite podcast app. I want to pass a sincere thank you onto everyone who's donated to the Everyday Dhamma Network recently. Your generosity makes these podcasts possible. If you haven't donated yet, but would like to support this Dhamma audio project, you can go to the Ko-fi links in the description for this talk. The Forest Path podcast is part of the Everyday Dhamma Network. If you go to everydaydhamma.net, you can discover more about the other podcasts on the network. Thank you for listening. May you all experience insight and peace.